is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me is Adriana Connolly, Multicultural Outreach Liaison for the Nevada Donor Network, and Angelique Daniels, owner of the nonprofit Paint for Kidneys and living kidney donor who donated to her husband to save his life. August is National Minority Donor Awareness Month, and Angelique is celebrating her 5-year kidneyversary. Adriana and Angelique, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Adriana, what exactly is the Nevada Donor Network?
Yes, the Nevada Donor Network is a federally designated nonprofit organ procurement organization, also responsible for facilitating tissue and cornea donation statewide. So in other words, our mission is to save and heal lives through organ, eye, and tissue donation.
Okay. Now, with August being National Minority Donor Awareness Month, why is it important to bring awareness to minority donors specifically?
Yeah, so currently we have over 100,000 Americans waiting for a life-saving transplant, and 61% of them are represented by multicultural communities. So it is really important for multicultural communities to donate. Transplants can be successful regardless of the race and ethnicity of the donor and the recipient. However, it is more likely to find a perfect match if they have similar genetic backgrounds. So that is the reason why it's so important. And the more people that register as donor, there are more opportunities for those individuals who are waiting for a second chance to have their transplant.
Okay. Now, Angelique, you did exactly what Adriana's talking about 5 years ago. You donated your kidney to your husband. What was it that made you decide to be a living donor?
For me, it wasn't really a tough decision, you know. When I knew that he needed a transplant, I knew that my blood type was O negative, and I knew that that was a universal donor. And it wasn't even a thought. I mean, I was just like, okay, what do we have to do? And as I've gotten connected more into this community and with Nevada Donor Network, I've realized that everybody's not going to do that. I realized there really is a big decision because of the myths surrounding donation. And I love being connected in this community to be able to talk about it and to be able to be living examples of what can happen when you donate. You know, I got to see up close and personal what happens when a transplant takes place. And I feel like it was such a blessing that part of my life work is to go out and talk to more people about it, especially in the minority community. There's lots of myths surrounding donating and transplants in general.
Yeah, definitely. Now, with this being your 5-year kidneyversary, you've been on this journey for the past 5 years. Besides discovering that not everyone would make that type of donation, what has the journey been like and the biggest light bulb moments that you've had during the journey?
The ignorance surrounding donating. And even with my own mom, it's actually been a 7-year journey, 2 years on dialysis before the transplant took place. And my mom, my own mom, and me and my husband have been together 30 years. So my husband's like a son to her. She was like, no, I don't want you to do it, because she was just scared and she just didn't know. And then as I educated her more and she went to her primary doctor and she wanted to tell her primary doctor how ridiculous it was. And her primary doctor would not go down that rabbit hole with her. She just wouldn't commiserate with her. And she said, no, it's a beautiful thing. The transplants are successful, highly successful, and they're a match that's highly unlikely. You need to support them on this because they need support. And my mom's attitude did a whole change. I mean, she, years later, her sister needed a kidney transplant and my mom volunteered. She couldn't do it. But just the fact that she turned that much just from the education and from seeing us, that was a light bulb moment for me that, okay, you do need to go out and talk to more people. This advocacy thing is a real thing. It does make a difference. And seeing us and seeing that we're both healthy will help that decision be a lot easier for people to do. So that was a huge light bulb moment for me. Just the fact that, like my mom, from going from one total end of the spectrum to the other, just by seeing us and how my husband went from, you know, going on dialysis. If you don't know what that is, it's being hooked up to a machine 3 days a week. He was like 4 hours at a time, and he was still able to work, which my husband is super strong, kind, loving, God-fearing man. And we were blessed that he was still able to work. But another light bulb moment was like today I just got back from visiting Fresenius Dialysis Center that took care of him. And we started doing that like every Mother's Day. We would do it for all the nurses, and Nurses Day, we would do something special for them. But they said that we were the first people that ever came back to acknowledge or to say thank you. And that was another light bulb moment too.
Wow.
Yeah, we're the only people, and our situation is unique. So they're always so happy to see us both, because we both are involved in the transplant and donation. So yeah, there's been a lot of light bulb moments, and we're just so thankful, and just, we don't take it for granted. Like, they took an organ out of me and put it in my husband. You know, we never want to take that for granted. Like, yeah, we did the thing. We want to see other people have the same success stories. There's people that won't even go on dialysis. I've walked for the National Kidney Foundation, and I met a dear friend, and her mom passed away in her 40s because she was scared to go on dialysis. And I was just like, wow, that was the easy part, you know? That was kind of the easy part. So there's just all these different stories that I hear. I've had a lot of light bulb moments. That advocacy, awareness, it's just so important to get out there and talk and remove that fear factor, or lessen the fear factor and the myths around the whole transplant donate life issues.
Yeah, absolutely. What a fantastic story. So just to clarify, you're now living with one of your kidneys and your husband has the other one.
Yeah, he actually has three. They don't take the other ones out because it's too traumatic for your body.
So he has his original two plus your other one.
So he has three, yeah.
Does he still have to go on dialysis on a regular basis?
Nope. He just has to take anti-rejection medicine once a day. He has to take a couple pills once a day. And they're working on, there's new, you know, medical advancements in medicine that perhaps that'll go away once. But yeah, that's all he has to do now. And I just stopped looking at him as like my delicate flower, like having to protect him from this or that and the other. And there's certain precautions because your immune system is compromised, I mean, a little bit. But he really can do anything like anybody else once you have a transplant. And that's what's so amazing. I feel like I've been so blessed to see that whole journey up close and personal, from getting told you have to be on dialysis. That was a rough moment. That was a rough doctor moment. And then going through the whole process to be on dialysis, and then, you know, doing the transplant process, and then now seeing him thrive, it's just amazing, you know? And a lot of donors don't get to see that. And I think, what am I supposed to do with this? Because this is such a blessing. I think I'm supposed to talk about it and share it and tell more people about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Adriana, you mentioned different types of donations that are needed, but what kind of donations are most needed among minority communities?
Well, 85% of the people who are on the national waiting list, they're waiting for a kidney, 85%. So a lot of people are needing a kidney, like how Angelique was mentioning. The most common donations are from deceased donors. So that means like when the death has occurred, then is when we consider donation, and one organ donor can save up to 8 lives through organ donation, and one tissue donor can heal more than 75 others. So it is really incredible, like the positive impact that donation has in someone's lives. So that's why we always just tell them, donate, educate yourself. And this is one of the challenges that we are experiencing here with the community in general, especially with the multicultural community, because there is a lot of lack of information, lack of education, like Angelique was mentioning. The community, unfortunately, they believe a lot of myths and misconceptions about this topic. And that's why we always are constantly out in the community just talking about this importance. Because people don't know. I mean, I'm a Latina. I grew up in a family where nobody taught me, nobody spoke to me about donation. And neither my family nor even my school. And then when I got to learn about this beautiful mission and the positive impact that donation has in our community, I was like, wow, I feel committed. I need to help the community. I need to advocate for this beautiful mission. And I just need to just have those open conversations with the community about, don't have any fears. Like, we answer any questions that you might have about this topic. For example, when I'm in the community, like, one of the biggest misconceptions is like, oh, if I have the heart in my driver's license, doctors are not gonna save my life if something happened to me and I get into an accident. So I'm always there to tell them, like, no, that is not true. Doctors are always are going to save your life. That is their primary goal, their biggest responsibility. And then when they apply all the life efforts to save your life and there is anything else that they can do, then is when the conversations of donation start. But it's just like having those simple conversations with the community and just like answer questions, because we want the people to make educated decisions instead of just making decisions based on what they hear that is not true.
Yeah. And it's only kidney donors who can be living donors?
Kidney donation can happen with, yeah, living donation, but then you can also donate part of your liver to another person. Your liver, it will regenerate, so you can live with only part of your liver. And the other one is pancreas. You can also donate a portion of your pancreas to another person. So for living donation, we have kidneys, we have liver, and we have pancreas.
Okay, fantastic. So Angelique, what is your nonprofit Paint for Kidneys?
Well, I'm an artist and art has been a huge part of my life. And I leaned on it a lot through the kidney journey. And I actually created a series of paintings, not intentionally, but that's just what happened while I was, you know, trying to support my husband mentally, spiritually, and physically, right? And my children, and just, it was a tough journey. So art really, really helped me. So I was thinking, so many people are struggling mentally and with depression and anxiety and just the crazy world that we live in, that I wanted to share that experience, the therapy, the joy, the healing of art with everyone. But I specifically named the nonprofit Paint for Kidneys because I wanted the opportunity, the segue to talk to anyone and everyone that paints with me about Donate Life and organ donation and transplant. And so I've created this nonprofit and now I'm opening an art center, which gives me a really good platform to engage with the community and talk about the whole world of transplant and donation. So Paint for Kidneys is a 501(c) nonprofit, and the mission is basically to spread awareness through art. So anyone can come to the center when I open on September 7th. So it's right around the corner, is my grand opening. Anyone can come and paint for free. We'll give you a little 3x3 canvas and some paints, and you can come in and just chill out and vibe out and just experience the joy and the healing power of art. And there'll be other things that you can buy here, and it'll be a resource center for anything surrounding the donation community. Where can I go if I need support? Where can I go if I need financial support? So that's the mission. I'm just so excited about it because I just got the keys about a couple months ago. It was a diamond in the rough. So I'm just about ready. I'm just about ready.
Yeah, that's awesome. So where will the center be when it opens?
I am at 8140 Southeastern on the corner of Windmill and Eastern in the Big Lot Shopping Center. And I'm in suite number 4. It's a great, well-lit parking lot. There's McDonald's, there's a Pizza Hut, there's a grocery store across the street. So I'll be open 12 to 8, Wednesday through Sunday. It's by appointment, so there'll be a phone number that people can call or text and schedule their time to come in and paint by themselves or with a group or, you know, however they want to experience it.
Nice. Do you want to give the phone number so listeners can follow up if they want to paint at Paint for Kidneys?
Yes, I have an 800 number. It's 1-800-331-6840. And they could call that number and schedule or get more information about when we're going to open, the exact day and all that stuff. Or they could visit Paint with Angelique on Facebook or Instagram.
Nice. And then, Adriana, where can people go if they want to find out more about the Nevada Donor Network or how to make a living donation, especially in the multicultural community for National Minority Donor Awareness Month?
Yeah, so if they want to learn more about organ and tissue donation, I encourage the community to visit mbdonor.org. There in our website, we have listed all type of education about facts, statistics, misconceptions, frequently asked questions, so people can get more educated just visiting our website. And also through our website, you can register if you are interested in becoming an organ donor, or even you can just go to the local DMV and just suggest to the donation box and you will be an organ donor. So yes, just visit the website to learn more information about the type of donations. And we just wanted to say thank you to all those individuals who support us and to make life possible.
Fantastic. Okay. So once again, the website for the Nevada Donor Network is nvdonor.org, nvdonor.org. You can find out more about the Nevada Donor Network and making a living donation. It's especially needed in the multicultural community. And August is National Minority Donor Awareness Month. So it's a perfect time to talk about this, a perfect time to learn more about it. Now, if you want to find out about Angelique's nonprofit, Paint for Kidneys, it will be opening on September 7th, 8140 Southeastern at Windmill. And you can find out more by either calling 800-331-6840, 1-800-331-6840, or follow Paint with Angelique on Facebook or Instagram. Paint with Angelique. And we've been speaking today with Adriana Connolly. She's the multicultural outreach liaison for the Nevada Donor Network, and also Angelique Daniels, who's the owner of the nonprofit Paint for Kidneys and a living kidney donor who donated one of her kidneys to her husband to save his life. And I want to thank you both for being here. Angelique, for sharing your story, which is so inspiring, and everything that you've learned throughout your journey, and the fact that this inspired you to form a new nonprofit that can help people with art therapy and just being able to paint and be creative, and it goes back to help the kidney community, is just fantastic. And Adriana, as always, I appreciate you being here, sharing with us what the Nevada Donor Network does and why it's so important to consider being a donor, especially in the multicultural community. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Adam Friedman, Professor and Chair of Dermatology and Residency Program Director in the Department of Dermatology at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Now, summer should be filled with fun, but if you're suffering from eczema or atopic dermatitis, heat and summer products can cause a flare-up. Dr. Friedman, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So what exactly is eczema?
So atopic dermatitis, which is the most common form of eczema affecting over 25 million Americans alone, is a chronic inflammatory condition that is disabling, disruptive, and destructive to one's quality of life and skin. That's why I partnered with Arcutis to raise more awareness about this condition, but also to discuss options to really tame that flame that comes with this condition.
Now, when you talk about flame, what are some of the specific symptoms?
Yep. So what's interesting about this condition is that even though it's so common, there are so many flavors in how it impacts someone's skin and quality of life. But in general, this rash can appear anywhere on the body. It typically is pink to red to almost purple, often with scale or flaking, and in some cases can even blister and ooze. Now, depending on so many different demographic features, from gender to age, even skin tone, it can look quite different, which is why it's so important that we talk about these key features so it can be identified and treated appropriately.
Yeah, and we've talked about different ways that it can look different in different people, but how can summer weather specifically affect flare-ups of eczema?
Yeah, so just having been in Las Vegas myself and really appreciating that heat, the physical heat, but also sweating that comes from said heat can absolutely worsen the condition. And what's somewhat unique about eczema, which literally means to boil up, once that itching, which is so unique to this condition because it feels so good to scratch, the more you scratch, the worse it gets. And around you go, really circling the drain and worsening that condition. So while for some, the summer heat can sometimes help, and for most cases, that sweating due to increased heat, which is really unparalleled these days, can absolutely make this condition worse.
And what about summer skin products, like, for example, sunscreen or bug repellent? How do they affect eczema?
So it's going to be highly variable and personalized. Now, when someone is actually flaring, and what I mean by flaring is not only do they have that itch, do they not have that visible rash, but a key feature of atopic dermatitis is skin barrier disruption, meaning the skin is open, you know, our armor is disrupted. And so that means that things that interface with our skin, whether it be the outside world or even to your point, products that you'd apply, the experience can be quite different. So it can sometimes be hard for these patients, especially when they're flaring, to apply things that you and I really are expected to use every single day, like sun protection to exposed areas, or to your point about bug repellent, they can actually create further irritation and worsen the condition.
Okay, so then what are some ways to care for skin for people who have eczema?
So the good news, I feel like I'm all gloom and doom, but the good news is we are in the era of eczema. In just the last 10 years, so much has been learned about the condition itself, but also what to do about it. And this goes across the spectrum of over-the-counter products, prescription topicals, and even advanced therapies that work from the inside out. But some very basic rules apply here in terms of what you would do on a daily basis. This includes minimizing soap use, especially to areas that are active, but also applying an over-the-counter moisturizer to damp skin to lock in moisture, because dry skin is a key feature of this condition that also makes the condition worse the drier the skin becomes.
Okay, if we're going to minimize soap use when there's a flare-up, what would someone use instead?
Yeah, you know, I think the mentality that we have to scrub and clean is somewhat of a modern one. You know, the traditional soaps are actually terrible for our skin because they change the acidity of our skin. They actually rip away the good fats that already someone with eczema is deficient in. So we really don't need to apply soap all over our body every day, even in the peak of summer. Simply just washing with water is sufficient. The areas that need soap every day are probably going to be the face, underarms, and groin. So I think already we're overdoing it. And especially when you're talking about eczema patients, we really need to limit it.
Yeah. Okay. Now you talked about new medication. What are some of the new medication options for eczema patients?
Yeah. So it's such an exciting time. And I can think back to when I was in my training and we had such limited options. You know, the most recent FDA approved topical Zoryve or Reflumilast 0.15% cream comes with, you know, the credibility of something that has gone through the FDA pathway, has undergone clinical trials, and was designed for the atopic dermatitis patient, being able to be applied once a day, indicated for mild to moderate disease in 6 years and up, which really takes into account that this is a condition that does not discriminate across age ranges. But for me, I think when you have an FDA approval, it's also validating to those suffering because, you know, an investment of time and energy and research has been put in to come out with a product meant for that patient population.
Okay, now does that work for other types of dermatitis as well?
So this particular formulation, Zoryve Reflumilast 0.15% cream, is only approved for atopic dermatitis for individuals 6 years and up. So for this point in time, it's only indicated for that condition.
Okay. So where could eczema patients go if they want to learn more about the condition or about new medication options that can help them?
Yep. So first and foremost, you're a board certified dermatologist or dermatology team, but also we have a great resource online, Zareeb.com, that goes through the ins and out of both this new FDA approved option, but also the condition itself.
Okay, perfect. So Zareeb.com is the website to go to. That's Zoryve.com, Zareeb.com. And that's the new FDA approved medication specifically for eczema. So if you're suffering from eczema and you're looking for a new option, Zareeb.com. And of course, speak to your dermatologist as well. And obviously, they will have this information as well. We've been speaking today with Dr. Adam Friedman. He's a professor and residency program director in the Department of Dermatology at the George Washington University. And Dr. Friedman, I want to thank you for being here and letting us know more about, first of all, how to prevent the flare-ups from eczema, how to deal with eczema on a day-to-day basis, and also the new medication options that are now available for eczema patients. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Ken Goodson, director of the AmeriCorps National Civilian Community Corps, or NCCC. Their new Forest Corps program for young adults is a partnership between AmeriCorps, NCCC, and the United States Forest Service. Ken, thank you so much for being here today.
Heather, thanks a lot for having me on.
So first of all, what exactly is AmeriCorps?
AmeriCorps is the federal agency for service and volunteerism. Currently engages a little over 200,000 Americans from all different walks of life in opportunities, both full-time and part-time, to be able to serve in their communities and give back to our nation.
And what specifically is the National Civilian Community Corps, or NCCC?
Yeah, AmeriCorps National Civilian Community Corps, or what we refer to as NCCC, is one of the agency's four primary programs. It's a team-based national service program for young adults. It's directly administered by AmeriCorps. And we engage young adults ages 18 to 26 in 10 to 11 month hands-on service experiences to develop leadership skills and strengthen communities. What really differentiates AmeriCorps and NCCC is its team-based focus. Our members serve, Heather, on teams of about 8 to 10 young adults, typically from very different backgrounds from one another, to go out and address community-identified priorities.
Nice. So tell us about the new Forest Corps program.
Oh, thanks. We're super excited about Forest Corps. And actually, it just became real last week as we inducted the first cohort of members. So AmeriCorps NCCC has been around for 31 years now. We've been running our traditional program. We've been running a partnership with FEMA focused on disaster preparedness, mitigation, response, and recovery. But we are now entering a new interagency agreement and partnership with the United States Department of Agriculture's Forest Service. And that will be for the Forest Corps, which you mentioned. And that's going to allow young adults to perform direct hands-on service in wildfire risk mitigation, reforestation, environmental conservation, and resource management. Specifically in the Forest Corps, we're working on two main priorities of the United States Forest Service. That is the wildfire crisis strategy, which I know impacts a lot of us here in the West, as well as the Forest Service's reforestation strategy.
Okay. When young people enter the Forest Corps program, what type of career opportunities would it prepare them for?
Yeah, great question. So there's no prerequisite in order to be able to apply. 18 to 26 years old, those are our eligibility requirements, American citizen. Beyond that, there's no educational requirement, and people do not have to have previous conservation, land management, or environmental background or experience. They just have to have a passion and an interest in serving. But over the course of their service term, AmeriCorps and CCC will train members on things like team building and conflict resolution, the soft skills necessary to be successful serving in a team-based environment in a high-stress setting. And then the Forest Service will train members on the technical skills. So things like using a chainsaw or red card certifying members to be able to work on wildland firefighting. And at the end of a service term, over the course of 10 to 11 months, members will have gained a series of direct hands-on experiences. So you combine those soft skills, you take those hard skills and the tangible service experience. And at the end of the service term, you have young adults who are very well prepared and qualified to be able to apply for conservation, land management, and environmental management careers.
And it sounds like beyond the agriculture, land management, and forestry experience, it also provides well-rounded leadership experience that kids could take into any type of future.
It's a great point, Heather, and you're exactly right. So I've had the privilege of being able to work with AmeriCorps' National Civilian Community Corps for a little over a decade now. And what strikes me the most about the alums of the program that I know is really the soft skills that they gained. These are individuals who are more than capable of working with people from any different background, any different walk of life. They can find themselves in an urban setting, a rural setting, working on a variety of different projects. And they're ultimately going to be successful in part because of the leadership skills they gained and their ability to work with people who are different from them.
Okay. Now you mentioned that there's no particular academic background required, but what kind of physical shape would they need to be in for a program like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for most of AmeriCorps in CCC programming, again, for our traditional program or for the FEMA Corps, there's not a physical fitness requirement, but there is one for the Forest Corps program, and that is a United States Forest Service requirement to ensure the health and safety of young adults who are involved in work on public lands, particularly as it pertains to fire risk mitigation. So all members of the Forest Corps program have to pass what is called a PAC test. You can find more information about the specific PAC test requirements at AmeriCorps.gov/Forest Corps. That's something that's administered at the front end of the Forest Corps service commitment. So if there are any applicants who find that they can't pass the PAC test, there's opportunities to serve in other AmeriCorps and CCC programs.
Perfect. And how does the Forest Corps program work in partnership with President Biden's American Climate Corps?
Yeah, so AmeriCorps' Forest Corps program is the first major interagency partnership under the President's American Climate Corps. The American Climate Corps, for those who don't know, is a new initiative that was launched by the president to train young people in high-demand skills for jobs in the clean energy economy. It draws inspiration from President Roosevelt's Civilian Conservation Corps, and it's looking to get young adults, really similar to the AmeriCorps and CCC age bracket of 18 to 26, skills necessary to move them into employment and green careers after they fulfill their service commitment in a service program. There are several, AmeriCorps and CCC's Forest Corps is one such program under the Climate Corps umbrella, and there are other wonderful programs across the nation that are a part of this. You can find out more about that at acc.gov.
Perfect. Okay. And let's give one more time the website where listeners can learn more about AmeriCorps or the new Forest Corps program.
Yeah, thanks, Heather, and would certainly ask your listeners, if you know a young adult age 18 to 26 who is looking to serve, looking to gain some tangible hands-on experience, and possibly considering a career in land or forest management, environmental conservation, if you could please direct them towards AmeriCorps.gov/Forest Corps. They'll be able to find information there. And then obviously my colleagues and I stand ready to answer any questions from potential applicants because we would love to be able to welcome them in to the AmeriCorps and CCC Forest Corps.
Okay. So once again, that website, AmeriCorps.gov/Forest Corps, AmeriCorps.gov/Forest Corps. FORESTCORPS. And we've been speaking today with Ken Goodson. He's the director of the AmeriCorps National Civilian Community Corps, or NCCC. And Ken, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know more about this amazing new program, Forest Corps, as well as the other programs that AmeriCorps has. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me on, Heather.
Looking to make a difference? Volunteer for your local fire department. Join a family that will serve with you, always have your back, and train you to be the best version of yourself. Visit makemeafirefighter.org.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Bernie Mullen, former sports executive, CEO of a multi-billion dollar company, and author of the new book, Reimagining America's Dream, Making It Attainable for All. Bernie was CMO of the NBA, CEO of the NBA's Atlanta Spirit, SVP of the MLB's Colorado Rockies, and a professor of business and sports management at the University of Massachusetts. Bernie, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Heather.
So what inspired you to write your new book, Reimagining America's Dream, Making It Attainable for All?
Well, I think it was, 50 years living in America, obviously an American citizen now, was a large part of it. I think some of the political toxicity between left and right, and a feeling that there were simple solutions in the middle, and a growing social conscience that so many people in America have lost the American dream. It was aspirational for me, and I think it's a uniting force that we need to have back in this country.
So you say 50 years in America. What country did you come from?
Originally English. Came here 24 years old to go to grad school at the University of Kansas, and I've never left.
Wow. Okay, that's awesome. So you mentioned that there's political toxicity in this country and there are some solutions in the middle. What are some of those simple solutions that you think we should implement?
Well, I think more than anything else, any chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And in America, there are 37 million people who are living below the poverty line. That has to change. And the simple solution for that is, a federal national minimum wage. You've got a teenage pregnant girl, or with a little baby. How does she survive, on one job? She can't. Almost certainly she can't. So let's give people at least $30,000. And in some markets, that's not enough. It's not enough in New York or Chicago or L.A. Maybe it's enough in Vegas if you live far enough out, but not really. So it starts with a national minimum wage. And then the single biggest opportunity that provides people a way to get out of poverty long term and create generational wealth without a shadow of a doubt is education. And so in the book, we're recommending free preschool, give a kid a chance with a quality preschool for free, that by the time that child goes into kindergarten, they're able to read and write, do basic math. That makes all the difference in the world. All the research shows that by third grade, if a child is not reading at third grade level, they will have all kinds of social problems in later life, which includes criminal activity, being in jail, teenage pregnancy, alcohol, substance abuse, all the non-productive type behavior. So really more than anything else, it starts there with income, starting to reduce the income gap, reduce poverty, and give people a chance of a real head start.
Okay, now you mentioned not just income, but generational wealth. Why is generational wealth so critical for everyone's future?
Well, when you look back at the generations of the poor and the minorities in particular in this country, who are mainly the poor, although there is, a much bigger population of white, rural, particularly poor, they just don't pass anything on from generation. You can't get home ownership. You can't get any kind of wealth. And an example is my own scenario. I grew up in income-subsidized housing, council housing, as we called it, in Liverpool in England, where I grew up. My dad worked in a butcher's shop, a very menial job, schlepped the meat in and out. He started selling life insurance and was really good at it. And so he got promoted. We moved to middle class when I was 11 years old. When my dad passed away, I got £4,000, about $6,000, given to me. I bought a house. I sold the house for twice what I paid for it 4 years later when I moved to the USA. That's the basis of all my real estate. I own two homes that are well in the $2 million plus range. And overwhelmingly, that was the fundamental basis of my wealth that made my life different. It allowed me to live the American dream and pass it on to my kids. So it's aspirational and it's also inspirational.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, a lot of people talk about solving social problems sometime in the future, you know, generations from now. But you said that we can solve America's 10 key social problems within a single generation. How is that possible?
I think it's even possible less than that, to be honest with you, Heather. The real heart of the program is an investment in youth. Spending the money that we've just committed to Gaza and Israel and Ukraine per year, that $100 billion, and put it into our own youth. And the program is free preschool, free latchkey kid syndrome. 1 in 5 American kids are going and staying at home alone after school. Let's have free babysitting. They stay at school. They get their homework done. And this is a population that is very likely to get into all the social problems I mentioned before, the teenage pregnancy, the alcohol and substance abuse and crime and getting involved with gangs. So let's eliminate that. Then prior to the freshman year in high school, we recommend a boot camp, 8-week sleepaway boot camp. We put them in these mothballed military camps we've got all over the country, about 1,000 kids per camp. John F. Kennedy's asked, not what your country can do for you, you can do for it. They get up early every morning and exercise. They learn how to cook meals. They learn how to be an adult. They learn how to get along with black, brown, yellow, rich, poor, whatever. And they learn responsibility and discipline and the fact of what does it mean to have a family, you know. So they learn what condoms are. They learn that that's something that you have rather than an unwanted pregnant child. So those are the fundamental parts of it. They get paid every summer. So they get paid $5,000 every summer. Before their sophomore, junior, and senior years, they get work experiences. By the time they're 18 and graduating from high school, they've got $20,000 in the bank, you know, because there's no tax deductions. You know, if they're able to save that, we'll go get banks. I mean, being a sports executive, I know how to get the banks and get them to give them 7.5% compound interest. Every child in America at age 18 would have $25,000 cash if they withdraw none of that for the 4 years. That is life-changing. They can then go start their own entrepreneurial business or buy an apartment. And then the final thing is if they've done that for the 4 years in high school, we'd give them $15,000 voucher for 4 years, $60,000 total to go to college or get a professional certification. 25-year-old kids would graduate with no student debt and with money in their pocket, able to build their own entrepreneurial business if they chose to do so.
Okay. Now, that's a very inspiring sounding program. But some of what you're describing in that sounds like, you know, a little bit of a tougher upbringing than what most kids currently get. And yet you talk about unifying the nation with peace and love, or PAL. So how do those two concepts go together?
Well, I think there's tough love. Heather, I grew up at 8 years old. I started cleaning my father's car. You know, I walked into his office and said, sir, I've washed your car. Have you done it fully? Yes, sir. And he, you know, looks under the bumper, sees his dirt under the bumper, and he rubs my nose in it, you know, because I hadn't washed it properly. That's tough love. Today, my dad would have been arrested, you know, for child abuse. I think we need to bring that back. I think everybody wins a trophy doesn't work. It's not America. We're a country and we're in the middle of the Olympics now, and we're all drawing pride from we've scored, you know, more medals than any other country, and hopefully we'll score more goals as well. You know, there's one winner and everybody else is the first loser or the second loser. And that mentality is from sports. And my career has been in sports. But the thing in sports is there's no compromise in sports. If you don't got game, if you don't have the game to play, you don't play. And we have to teach our kids, you know, yes, in a loving, kind of gentle nation, but not being soft. We need grit. The difference between a winner and a loser is the winner gets back up one more time and says, it shall not defeat me. You know, that's what the book's all about. I almost broke my back putting in a wood-burning stove in my house in Massachusetts in the middle of the winter with 3 feet of ice on the top of the roof. having to cut through it with a pickaxe and then with a chainsaw to be able to put the chimney in so that we didn't freeze at night. Those are things that we need to teach our kids to be better at. And I think it's completely consistent with the PAL program, Heather. In the PAL program is we start calling each other pals. Heather, you are now my pal. I'm your pal. We are brothers and sisters, Americans all together, and we're here for the American dream. And PAL stands for peace and love. And let's do that rather than calling each other deplorables or evil because, you know, somebody has a different political opinion to me. I respect everybody's opinion on everything. I may differ from it, but I can live with people who have different opinions as long as they live with me and respect my difference in opinions.
Yeah, okay. Now, expanding this peace and love concept to the global community, what do you see as this country's role in ensuring peaceful worldwide coexistence and balanced trade?
Well, I was very much an advocate of we've got to stop being the world cop. And a couple of years ago, Heather, I was flying back from Toronto doing business with the Canadian Soccer League. And I sat next to him, an MP, member of parliament for Canada, one of Trudeau's liberal people, which liberal in Canada is like England, where I grew up. It's middle.
Right.
It's not extreme left. It's not extreme right. And so I mentioned I was writing a book, and one of my thoughts was, we've got to stop being the world cop. And he corrected me, and he said, if not America, who?
Mm.
And I'm like, yeah, Russia, China? You want them being the world cop with their value systems? So I don't like us being the world cop. But I think we have to be as the biggest democracy in the world. We have the largest GDP in the world. But I think what we need to do first is take the phrase, physician, heal thyself first, in meaning we have to be the best democracy in the world. And we have to demonstrate, it's very much like being a parent. Too many parents today want to be their kid's best friend. I don't think that's what we need. I think what we need is the kids to have a lot of good friends and the parents to be the disciplinarians, not whooping them in the butt like I got from my school and from my father as a child. I don't think we're bringing that back. But hey, here's the line. And a positive motivational speaker that was very inspirational to me in my young executive career is Zig Ziglar. He tells the story of an Alabama grade school, brand new school built. Before they build a wall around the school, the kids go out to play in that spring semester, and they hide and huddle in the blacktop right next to the school. Then over the summer, they build a wall, and they come back in the fall, and the kids go all the way up to the wall on the grass, the full extent of the school property. And so he asked the question, is that wall freeing or is it confining? And the answer is it's freeing. And so with parents, we provide the wall, be home by 11 o'clock when you're 15 years old or whatever it may be, and we stick to it and the wall doesn't move. And that's what we're lacking is that consistency, that firm discipline, those guidelines. And that's what this program and this book is meant to be all about. Starting at 13 years old with that boot camp, the kids get to see all the other kids, get to get along hopefully better. And all of these philosophies are then intertwined into how do we become an American adult, a responsible adult, responsible for my own behavior, my own actions, and able to get along with everybody else, respecting their differences.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you've mentioned your sports executive background. What are some of the lessons that you've learned during that journey that you hope readers can now learn by reading the book?
Well, I think without a doubt, number one is hard work. You know, I've been around Michael Jordan. You know, I did consulting work for Wayne Gretzky's company after he'd retired playing. And these special superstars, it starts with hard work. Nobody outworked Michael Jordan. Nobody. And then they've got this incredible talent and this incredible focus. So what I've seen with super performances, superstars, and the Olympics are a great example when you look back to Michael Phelps and how early in the morning he got up and just how much he trained and how focused he was and how willing he was to sacrifice. And that is the message I taught my own kids. I've been very blessed to have three kids of my own and then a fourth through my second marriage, all of whom are very successful in their career, all of whom give back to their communities. And I taught them that they could be whatever they wanted to be if they worked hard enough at it. And, you know, look at superstars, look at highly successful people, ask them what it took for them to get where they get, and then model it. I mean, you're going to be yourself. You have to be yourself and stick to your values. Don't compromise your values. That's one of the biggest problems in our society right now is we have extremes in political parties, you know, where political leaders have to compromise their values and go more extreme left or more extreme right to embrace the entirety of their party to get the nomination. And 65% of Americans, according to Pew Research, are independents, moderates, centrists like me. I'm a fiscal conservative, but I like to think I have a warm heart and a social conscience. And community is important. Making the community a great place to live and work and be, those things are important. And that's what you see with great role models, with successful people. And that's sports. If you don't have game, you don't play. It's that simple. And living in Las Vegas, I mean, you see that with the entertainment industry. It's the best in the world.
Yeah, and we have a lot of great sports teams here now as well, where when I moved here 12 years ago, we didn't. So it's a lot of growth, and a lot of it comes from that attitude that you're talking about, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, go for it. You can be whatever you want to be as long as you work at it. Malcolm Gladwell's book, 10,000 Hours of Practicing, that's what we have to teach our kids. That's what it takes. And the difference between a winner and a loser is the winner gets back up one more time. And like I said earlier, says, it shall not defeat me. It's not going to beat me.
Yeah. Now, what do you do with the profits from the book?
All the profits from the book and all my consulting go to the Aspire Difference Foundation. And the Aspire Difference Foundation I created for single parents with preschool kids. I think that the single biggest thing we got to do is we've got to give great quality education right now, not so much in preschool, but in grade, middle school, and high school, we're spending almost $3,000 less in low-income school districts on our students. We've got to change that. So free preschool really frees up that money, which is $10,000, $15,000 per child. Any single working single parent knows exactly what that cost is. So that's number one, the latchkey kid, and then obviously the experience through high school. All of those things combined free up the parent so that parent can sit and feed healthy food, and we teach that in the program, not go to a food desert, not McDonald's on Monday, Domino's on Tuesday, but healthy lifestyle exercise for that child makes all the difference in the world. So our foundation starts with mental health of the caregiver, a safe, secure home, hopefully not in the hood, but one where the kid can walk out the front door, play, and not be recruited into a gang. Number three, a healthy lifestyle, exercise, good food. And number four, most important, learning how to read and write and how to do basic math before they go into kindergarten. So they're not one of those third graders who cannot read and write to that level and are high probability of getting into problems, social problems later in life.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you've been talking about a lot of thought-provoking topics and lessons, which are all in the book. So where can people find out more or get a copy of your new book, Reimagining America's Dream, Making It Attainable for All?
Thank you, Heather. It's at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, online. Please feel free to reach out. And particularly, we need politicians. We need politicians to adopt some of these elements in their manifesto. So they can reach out to bernie.mullin@playfly.com. That's B-E-R-N-I-E.mullin, M-U-L-L-I-N, at playfly, P-L-A-Y-F-L-Y.com.
Okay, fantastic. So once again, Bernie's new book is called Reimagining America's Dream, Making It Attainable for All. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you like to buy your books. And if you're a politician and you'd like to reach out, bernie.mullin@playfly.com, bernie.mullin@playfly.com. And of course, we've been speaking today with Dr. Bernie Mullin. He's a former sports executive, CEO of a multi-billion dollar company, and of course, the author of the new book that we've been talking about, Reimagining America's Dream, Making It Attainable for All. And Bernie, it's been so fascinating talking to you and hearing about your ideas. Like you, I came from a different country. I'm from Canada, so I understand when you say about the party system there. And it's just been really inspiring with your sports background, everything you've learned from being an immigrant, going for the American dream your own way over the decades, the lessons that you've learned, and your outlook for the future. Definitely a lot of thought-provoking lessons that are in the book and in the conversation that we just had. So I really appreciate you being here today. Thank you so much.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for having me. I thought I heard the little oot, which is the Canadian giveaway there. So great to be on with you, and I really appreciate all your support.
Every child deserves a safe, loving, and permanent home. Help the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption find families for children who've lingered in foster care the longest. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include this Monday, August 5th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Foster Friday Foundation, and Monday, August 19th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Adelson Clinic. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Las Vegas Rescue Mission is holding their annual bottled water drive through August 31st. During the heat of summer, water is crucial for those experiencing homelessness. You can drop off bottled water donations at the Las Vegas Rescue Mission security gate 24/7. To make larger donations or organize a drive, contact Director of Development Heather Williams at 702-320-2089. That's Heather Williams, 702-320-2089. Or you can find out more at vegasrescue.org. That's vegasrescue.org. And the Just One Project is hosting the 4th annual Big Cup Golf Tournament on Thursday, October 17th at the Revere Golf Club. Join the organization and their sponsors on the green to raise funds for the Just One Project programs with friendly competition, food, and drinks. Find out more or sign up to play at thejustoneproject.org. That's thejustoneproject.org.